How water fluoridation got started. According to Gary Knoll. Now, Dean remembered McKay and Black's claims that fluorosis victims' mottled discolored teeth were especially resistant to decay. He came up with the notion that fluoride added to the water supply at the magic threshold dosage of 1 part per million would prevent tooth decay while avoiding damage to bones and teeth. He recommended further studies to determine whether his hypothesis was true. Back at the Mellon Institute, Alcoa's Pittsburgh Industrial Research Lab, this news was galvanic. There, biochemist Gerald J. Cox immediately fluoridated some lab rats in a study and concluded that fluoride reduced cavities and that the case should be regarded as proved. In a historic moment in 1939, the first public proposal that the U.S. should fluoridate its water supply was made not by a doctor or a dentist, but by Cox, an industry scientist working for a company threatened by fluoride damage claims and burdened by the odious expense of disposing of tons of toxic industrial waste. Cox began touring the country, stumping for fluoridation. Dean would go on to carve out a nice career for himself as the father of public water fluoridation. He became the first dental scientist at the National Institute of Health, advancing to director of the dental research section in 1945. After World War II, he directed epidemiological studies for the Army in Germany. When Congress established the National Institute of Dental Research, NIDR, in 1948, Dean was appointed its director, a position he held until retiring in 1953. In his post at the NIDR, he was to oversee the first clinical trial of fluoridation in an American city, Grand Rapids, Michigan. This is what Joel Griffiths and Chris Bryson had to say. Some 50 years after the United States began adding fluoride to public water supplies to reduce cavities in children's teeth, declassified government documents are shedding new light on the roots of that still controversial public health measure, revealing a surprising connection between fluoride and the dawning of the nuclear age. Today, 2/3 of U.S. public drinking water is fluoridated. Many municipalities still resist the practice, disbelieving the government's assurances of safety. Since the days of World War II, when this nation prevailed by building the world's first atomic bomb, U.S. public health leaders have maintained that low doses of fluoride are safe for people and good for children's teeth. That safety verdict should now be re-examined in the light of hundreds of once-secret World War II documents obtained by Griffiths and Bryson, including declassified papers of the Manhattan Project, the United States military group that built the atomic bomb. Joel Griffiths wrote, "During the industrial explosion of the 1920s, the U.S. Public Health Service was under the jurisdiction of Treasury Secretary Andrew W. Mellon, a founder and major stockholder of the Aluminum Company of America. In 1931, a Public Health Service dentist named H. Trendley Dean was dispatched to remote towns in the West where drinking water wells contained high concentrations of natural fluoride. His mission? To determine how much fluoride people could tolerate without sustaining obvious damage to their teeth. Dean found that teeth in these high fluoride towns were often discolored and eroded, but he also reported that they appeared to have fewer cavities than average. The University of Cincinnati's Kettering Laboratory, funded largely by top fluoride emitters such as Alcoa, quickly dominated fluoride safety research. A book by Kettering scientist and Reynolds Metals consultant E.J. Largent was admittedly written in part, quote, "to aid industry in lawsuits arising from fluoride damage," unquote. Nonetheless, the book became a basic international reference work. Frederick B. Exner wrote, "Around 1900, the very existence of the smelter industry, both in Germany and Great Britain, was threatened by successful suits for fluoride damage and by burdensome laws and regulations. Today, that same threat hangs over the bulk of American big industry, and fluoridation offers both camouflage and scapegoat. Hence, the relentless and uncompromising drive for universal fluoridation."